I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast, a World Cup Daily edition. I am Emalian, as ever, sports editor of The Independent, and your host for this evening. And it was a monumental evening because we have lost the team that I thought was going to win the World Cup in its shortest possible terms. Yes, we have lost Brazil, the five-time World Cup winners. Pentacampeão, they were looking for what they call the Hexa, the sixth World Cup, but they are out after being defeated 2-1 by Belgium. The Belgians went 2-0 up early, and they deserved this game in very short hand, but they conceded one late through Renato Augusto, and it could have been a real siege at the end, but Belgium hold out, so Belgium go through to the World Cup semi-finals. But you don't want to hear that from me. Let's talk to Johnny Liu, who was there in Kazan, in what they're now calling the Graveyard of Champions.
Another enthralling night in Kazan. Brazil out of the World Cup, the same ground where Germany and Argentina have gone out in previous weeks. And really, a surprise result that didn't really feel like a surprise. I think, you know, within half an hour, as Belgium went 2-0 up, there was almost a sort of a procession feel about it. Even though Brazil kind of rallied a little bit in the second half, pulled a goal back, it was probably their poorest performance of the World Cup in their biggest game. And they really didn't have an answer to Belgium's front three and the way they counter-attacked. When Lukaku and Hazard and De Bruyne got hold of the ball, they seemed to have so many options. Lukaku against Miranda was a real mismatch. Fernandinho was, you know, absolutely adrift in midfield, and you know, the ease with which Belgium were able to cut through them twice in that first half was, I mean, not even that shocking. Just sort of, I mean, if you're a Brazilian fan who's seen these kind of successive tournament failures, it was really just quite dispiriting. And you know, like I said, they did come back in the second half. Firmino came on, which gave them an extra body in between the lines, and you know, they had a few chances towards the end. Courtois had a great game, but Belgium defended really well. Fellaini and Witsel in midfield had a pretty decent game, and you know, it just wasn't enough for Brazil. It was really, really disappointing from them. And well, I suppose the question now is what Belgium can go on and do next. That semi-final against France in St. Petersburg on Tuesday night has the feel of a real meeting of equals. And I guess for Belgium, who have sort of built up this incredible momentum over their five games, and having won all five now, I've got this incredible confidence. And it was interesting to hear Vincent Kompany in the pre-match press conference say that there was a time when Belgium, you know, a small country with traditionally not much of a great football pedigree, they would have approached a game like Brazil with almost a kind of trepidation. They'd go in expecting to get beaten, and there's none of that now. These are players who play at the very highest level, champions of England and Italy and Spain and Germany, and there's a real swagger to them that I think hasn't always been present. The other thing that they've really kind of developed in the last 2 years, even less actually, in the last sort of 5 or 6 months, is this cohesion. It was interesting to see Thomas Meunier, the right wing back, tweeting after the game that the collective always trumps the individual. And I think that's harking back to their failure in France at the Euros 2 years ago when they lost to Wales in the quarterfinal, that they never had they seen more like a collection of really talented individuals that had no idea how to play as a team. And where Martinez deserves credit is he's got them playing as a team. There was a system, like a pretty complicated tactical system that they deployed tonight, which was essentially three at the back with the ball, and kind of Meunier pushing on the right. But when Brazil got the ball and attacked them, it was Meunier slotted back and made it a four with Fellaini and Witsel ahead of them, and made them very hard to break down. And although Brazil had chances, they weren't consistent chances, and they didn't really seem to have much of a plan of how to open Belgium up. So that's something that Belgium really have. And I think, you know, if you reach a World Cup semi-final, then you've got to be considered, you know, a real contender to win it. It's going to be a great semi-final in St. Petersburg. The talent on show in that game is going to be incredible. And I think Belgium have finally reached a level. This was a watershed moment for them. They've beaten big teams in friendlies, and they've beaten you know, quite good teams in qualifying. They've breezed through qualifying groups. They've made quarterfinals of tournaments. But this is the first time they've beaten a really top-class opponent in a big tournament. And I think for this group of players, it's something they needed to do. And what they can achieve now is pretty much limitless. I can't wait for St. Petersburg on Tuesday night. And there's a real focus to them that suggests that they could go all the way.
Johnny, I think it's fair to say, impressed by Belgium and sees them as potential World Cup winners. They will play in the semi-final France, who maybe didn't impress quite as much. They beat Uruguay, and it, you know, in the end looks handy at 2-0, but they were outplayed early on. They scored a goal for Rafael Varane, heading home a free kick, but Uruguay had been the better team up until that point, and then, you know, a goalkeeping mistake for the second goal from Muslera in the end puts France through. But this was not convincing by any stretch from the French in Nizhny Novgorod. And our man in Nizhny is Miguel Delaney tonight, and he's got two special guests, both friends of Indie Football, Ken Early from the Second Captains podcast, but we've also got Josh Robinson on again, who was at France Argentina with me, and they are talking about France Uruguay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, Ed. We're just outside Nizhny here with two special guests. The shoe on the other foot this time, because here's Ken Early from Second Captains, not asking the questions. Hello,
how
Ken.
How are you doing, Miguel? Good to talk to you.
Thanks.
And you, Ed. Yeah.
And Josh Robinson from the Wall Street Journal.
What's going on, guys?
Well, we just watched Brazil against Belgium, which looked a much better game than the one we were at, which is France. But after watching all that, what do we think of where the semi-final lies and how the day went?
Well, I hope Belgium wins the semi-final, based on just the fact the way they took the game to Brazil in the first half, and they played better in that first half than France have, I think, at any time I've seen them.
Yeah.
Although maybe there was a little bit of the France-Argentina about that. I mean, it might seem a bit like I'm being a bit tough on France, since they have had a 4-3 with Argentina, but it seemed like they were ribbing up a bad team.
It's what I mean, Argentina gave them so much space, and that defence is a gang of clowns, really,
Who
just stepped up. I mean, it was one of the... I mean, actually, after the game, I went on a little rant to Josh about Deschamps, because watching that France team is so frustrating, because there's so much talent there, and yet they look like a gang of, like, just dogs of war. It's just so dreary.
Well, that's his nature. That's the team he wants to build. He wants, like, a low block, defensive solidity, and then anything else that happens is gravy for him.
Do you think as a manager he actually has an idea, or is this just something he's kind of, well, we did this in 98, I was a defensive midfielder, and it's if like he's never fully developed it, that's just the way he thinks the game should be played?
I mean, that's the way he played everywhere else he's managed. I mean, to be fair, he didn't do very much at those clubs, but who's to say that he has another reason for doing something with France, right?
Yeah.
It's more or less working for him. He's taken them to a major final. He's got them in the semis of the World Cup.
I mean, in one way, it makes sense what he's doing, because he's got players like Mbappe and Griezmann who are brilliant on the counter-attack, so why not play in a way that gives them space? So it is rational. I don't think that it's very French in the sense that I don't think it's the kind of exciting team that France would like to have. You know, if I think back to Deschamps, one player I can remember who had a huge falling out with him was Eric Cantona.
Yeah.
Who to me does seem to actually incarnate a lot of those French qualities. But then again, Cantona didn't really ever do much for the national team.
Yeah.
Deschamps won the World Cup. So, you know, the water carrier is carrying water all the way. So.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you bring up Griezmann playing on the counterattack, because Griezmann himself has said, you know, this is a way I know how to play, because it's what I do all year at Atletico.
But what's frustrating about France, though, especially like having watched them today, it's a sense that you would think, given all that attacking talent, if they had a manager, I mean, if they had maybe Roberto Martinez, because Martinez done a really good job of kind of coordinating those Belgium attackers and giving a shape to them in the way that Wilmots couldn't, although Wilmots is also kind of a complete clown. But if they had, don't make that gesture.
just killing him there.
Josh just made a slashing gesture as if it's going to be cut out. I can assure you that's not going to be the case. Clown will stay in. But yeah, I mean, if they had a manager like Martinez, whatever, at the back, but to kind of coordinate that attack, that would that not give France a better chance of winning a World Cup? Or is the way to win World Cups just a drearier way through? Is that international football?
I mean, would they be sacrificing the defensive stability they have there?
Yeah.
And on Belgium, I think what made that game so good is also one of the things that kind of makes Belgium vulnerable in the semis.
Yeah.
They survived an entire half of Brazilian chances there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe the manager doesn't help, but even if France had, you know, Roberto Martinez as their manager, I think they'd be better off. If they could take one person from Belgium, it would be Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think he's the kind of player who could transform the way they play. I mean, notionally, Paul Pogba is that player for France.
Yeah, there's just something lacking. There's more.
He's not really joining things
up. Yeah, there's more focus to De Bruyne's game than Pogba still, isn't there?
De Bruyne is phenomenal. I mean, the goal that he scored today, is there anyone who can hit those kind of shots?
Yeah.
I mean, he scored a couple of those in the Premier League. You know, those kind of straight,
yeah,
incredibly hard shots, exactly where he wants them to go. I mean, you could see the goal coming. You know,
yeah,
you're like, he's, you know, this is a good chance of going in. I mean, Pogba, I've seen him hit balls like that, but somehow he doesn't have a collection,
yeah,
of balls like that.
Well, what I actually particularly liked about the end of the game was both in the last 2 minutes, both De Bruyne and Hazard using their attacking qualities, like kind of the ultimate destruction defensive play. But De Bruyne chipped the ball over the top, not to create a chance, but to put Hazard in the corner, who then kind of used his control to win a corner.
Yeah.
I like that. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Brazil I think it's interesting what's going to happen now with Brazil. I mean, it seems to me as though Neymar has kind of written himself out of the top level of the game now.
Yeah.
And this World Cup was supposed to be his kind of statement of, you know, I'm the greatest. And instead, all he's done is leave everybody with the impression of,
you're wasting your career.
An idiot. Like a guy who's kind of lost his way. He's lost his way in terms of his career. He's in France. He's known for diving more than he is for football now. I mean, you see these videos of like kids, you know, Neymar, and they all jump on the ground. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a disaster. World Cup has been a complete disaster.
Here's another thing for Brazil as well. Actually, I think there's an argument that obviously it's not humiliating, but it could almost sting more if in a different way than 2014. Because in 2014, right through the tournament, to a sense, they kept getting away with it, and it was always going to come. Whereas here, they should be the best team in the competition, and they've kind of pissed it away.
They don't really feel either as though, I mean, the 2014 team kind of felt like they'd come through a couple of big tests against Chile and Colombia. Like they had a couple of big, you know, neck cords and the neck standing out type of moments. And then it all obviously went wrong. But, you know, they lost to a very good team. I mean, Germany, do they respect Belgium in the same way as they respect Germany? You know, 7-1 is terrible, but like they're, at least they're like, well, like, they were a seriously good side. They went on to win the final. You know, I suppose they hope Belgium can win now. Yeah. And at least they can say, well, we lost to the winners. But
they are one incredible save from Courtois at the end there from extra time.
And misses by Firmino, Coutinho.
The Coutinho, I mean, I felt a bit sorry for Coutinho, given he's arguably in Brazil's best player throughout this tournament, even if not completely perfect himself. So for him to miss that chance, and Neymar set it up.
Renato Augusto as well, he scored, then missed it.
Yeah, that was, he took that weirdly.
Yeah, he had a lot of space, but I mean, it's been a disaster. I mean, their whole World Cup has been a big disappointment because because of the way it's ended, but also because of the way they played.
Yeah.
Because they didn't ever play the way they did in qualifying.
Yeah.
In qualifying, they were completely on top of every game.
Yeah.
And playing good stuff. This time, or at the World Cup, they actually retreated a bit, decided to play in a counter, and have gone out without really playing well.
It probably sums up the day and the game we were at that we're talking more about than we watch on TV, rather than the actual French Uruguay. I mean, do you have anything more to say about that?
Well, there was
Uruguay wilted, didn't they?
Uruguay are like a country that doesn't have enough good players. You know, and when they lost Bentancur for the semi-final, I mean, the free kick, the goal came from a challenge that he made, and he was going to be suspended for the semi-final. So they lost one of their only other good players.
Yeah.
Cavani is already out. It's like Suarez, who is like a diminished, he's not the same Suarez.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have enough. And then they let in a farcical goal. Like the country that makes a bigger cult of defending than anyone else lets in a carrier's goal.
Paki Bonner on D4.
And like, you know, it's just, and then everyone knew it was over. So it was one of the, I don't know if it's unprofessional to say that I actually sent the match report before the whistle. But it was pretty easy to send it very promptly, you know, on the whistle. Yeah. And, you know, because you knew the game was over as soon as the second goal went in.
And what little defensive frailty France had in the first 20 minutes, Uruguay didn't make them pay for.
I've seen on the Twitter machine that Gary Neville, who actually was before me in the queue as he walked in, he seemed happier then. But apparently he's getting a lot of stick for being grouchy during the game and for slagging off. Was it Rodriguez or Jimenez for crying 10 minutes before the end? As you said, I think the game was over.
I don't know why he's crying. I suppose it was sad. I mean, crying during the game is a bit strange. You get something in his eye.
You're not supposed to do that.
There was insects on the pitch. The Lloris had an insect in his mouth at one point.
Did he?
A huge insect.
Crucially, did not cry, though.
No, spat it out. I don't know. Uruguay obviously got really hyped up for the game like they always do, and then they lose in such a deflating way. Like, it feels like they haven't really shown what they can do. And
that's the thing. Sorry, go on, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's especially the way France scored that goal off a set piece, kind of like, and exploiting a team that had been quite good at defending them until that point, kind of reminded me of France 4 years ago, the way they went out quite meekly to Germany. You know, they'd shown that they had improved, but in the end they just didn't turn up to that game. And lost to a far superior side.
It's also the problem with a side like you. I mean, obviously they have to kind of set up this way because, as you say, they've just got limited resources. But once a team like that goes behind in a game like that, it's just too difficult for them to completely shift everything about themselves.
I mean, they could still have, as long as it was 1-0, they had a chance, because, I mean, there was the great save by Lloris from, was it Caceres?
Yeah,
Southampton's header. Godin.
Now the second best save missed.
He missed the follow-up. And so as long as it was 1-0, they could always score a goal like that.
Yeah.
But as soon as 2-0, that everyone knew it was finished.
What do we think for Tuesday? The one thing I would say about that, I mean, it should be, when the two teams finally go at it, it'll be a good game. But in the sense of a World Cup semi-final, Brazil-France is much more of a World Cup fixture. This is a bit of a kind of a pre-tournament
Euros
friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the World Cup is shrinking. Like, it's over. Mm-mm. You know, it's just, it remains to be seen who actually won. But all of the South Americans are gone now. You know, if you're walking around here, walk around Nizhny, last night.
Yeah.
It's just amazing the contrast between Nizhny the night before this game and the night before the England-Panama
game,
when it was just like streets are packed, everyone is out, loads of fans.
I'm staying almost in the same place I was for Argentina-Croatia, which, and there's a massive shopping mall beside the stadium. So both days I came through the shopping mall, and I actually felt a bit sad. It was a bit poignant because when Argentina were here, there was like thousands of fans of the shopping mall, like, you know, the songs. I stayed there for an hour, kind of watched them and recorded them. Whereas today it was just, I mean, there were more Uruguay fans than French fans, but there's ultimately only 3 million Uruguayans, so there's not that many coming. There was a bit of sadness, and I think in losing, whatever about the football side, in losing South Americans, it has lost a bit of colour.
Really, because they were the ones who came.
Europeans didn't show up.
Yeah.
No. Did you see France fans in the stadium today? It was one corner
behind
the door.
I saw a guy dressed up as Obelix.
That's great.
I think they've gone for the goal.
Thanks for that.
The Belgians do that as well. The Belgians also kind of wear Viking hats with plaits coming out of them.
Who owns Asterix? Is he French or
he's
Belgian?
He's French.
Okay. Tintin's Belgian. Yeah.
But he, you know, the Belgians go for the Belgae, of course. One of the tribes. So
go on, yeah.
the Belgae. The Swabi. There's a few different tribes, but I mean, I think France was 31 out of 32 countries. Maybe only was the UK actually in last place, or was England in last place of the ticket sales?
Really?
They were right down the bottom. I mean, usually England would be pretty high, but England and France, I think, were among the lowest take-ups of any country. So
I mean, France has been turning up in like 2,000 and 3,000 for games.
Yeah,
they had like fewer than 2,500 for the Peru game in Yekaterinburg. Yeah. I know it's tough to get to, but it's still the World Cup.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, you're France. You're not nobody.
I'm assuming we're going to see a few more England fans
tomorrow. Yeah.
I mean, obviously they've got two more games to get out here for after this next one.
Semi in third place.
So there could be maybe they're postponing it a little bit. But I assume we're going to see a bit of a bandwagon effect developing here. I mean, surely these boys deserve support.
Yeah, yeah.
There's still tickets on sale for tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of tickets being sold by Brazil fans.
Well,
no, actually, it's not that semi-final. It's the other one. Whoever was meant to be in that semi-final is going to be selling up. Like today, I was talking to Uruguayan on the way down here yesterday, and he was saying he went out in his Uruguay shirt the night before, and like every 2 seconds, there's another Argentinian coming up to him saying, "Oh mate, please buy this ticket."
Oh really?
Yeah. They were just desperately offloading the tickets wherever they could. But he's like, "But the Argentinians, they were asking for FIFA price." You know, forget it, man.
They didn't realize the market there, did they? Yeah. Like, you know, it's a buyer's market.
I think tickets won't be as difficult to get as maybe. I would encourage all the England fans to come out here and see this wonderful country for yourselves. Although I was talking to another journalist here. He says, "Do you notice the way everyone in here is coughing? Like, we've both had sort of coughing."
Everyone
in the press center is coughing.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Is that the air conditioning of the press center, I think? Could be, is it?
I've had a cold for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Also, I mean,
we're not all being poisoned, are we?
Hope not. I mean, I suppose the other side of it is tournaments, like, you're kind of traveling a lot, like 4 hours sleep a night a lot of the time. Mm. Your immune system is down.
Hopefully that's it.
Yeah. Takes less poison then.
Is this what I'm saying? On a semi-related note, actually, if Russia and England go out, it is very much the Maastricht Cup. It's
the EU.
I think in the original Sensible Soccer Night, there was a turn. They were obviously didn't have the rights, so rather than call it the European Championships, they call it the Maastricht Cup.
Listen, from the moment you've got England, France, and Belgium there, it's the Eurostar Challenge Trophy.
Yeah, a little vase. It should be nice. right, okay.
Going off the rails.
Yeah, and as you hold one, actually, so you're not completely off the rails. You had to see that, really. It's rubbish.
You had the Eurostar joke all teed.
I know. Yeah, cut that out, Ed. Cut out that bit. Right. Thank you. Thanks to the lads. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Miguel.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Good night.
Yes, and good night to you, Miguel. Thank you for that. We'll talk to Miguel again in the coming days, I guess. He'll want to react to England, whatever happens. And then also, we've got two semi-finals coming up that he's going to be at. But I guess most of you are listening because you want a bit of a preview for the England game, which will be today, I guess, by the time you're listening. It's Saturday. England, the biggest game in a generation for the England football team, feels weird to say, against Sweden in the quarterfinals. They win that, and they're likely to play Croatia in the semi-final, possibly Russia if things keep going their way. But our man with England throughout this competition has been Jack Pitt-Brook. He's been spending most of his time up in Rapino, which is a very small, weird place north of St. Petersburg. But now he's down in Samara, which is, as I'm sure he'll tell you, a long way away.
Hello, Ed. Hello, listeners. I'm here in Samara, which is a place I haven't been yet during this World Cup. It's really, really far away. If you look at it in the map, it's practically in Kazakhstan. So it kind of feels very different from the place I've been before. And it also feels very remote. For a start, I don't think I've seen any England fans since I've been here. I'm sure there will be quite a few at the game on Saturday evening, probably even more than, hopefully even more than there were in Moscow on Tuesday night. But it does mean that I think the general feeling going into this game is it doesn't feel quite as big as it should be, or doesn't feel quite as big as it is yet. Certainly if you compare it to Portugal in 2006 or Brazil in 2002, I think probably just because of the location and because of the opposition, Sweden. I mean, it's funny to think about it now, but the way the draw has worked out has put England in an incredibly fortunate position. I mean, not to underestimate Sweden, but you'd have to say of the eight quarter-finalists, they are... I mean, they're probably not the weakest because Russia are the weakest, but there are all sorts of other reasons why you might not want to play Russia. And it's almost... I mean, Southgate's decisions, particularly on resting players against Belgium and therefore coming second in the group, have been vindicated almost more than he could ever have imagined. You know, remember that if Marcus Rashford had scored that 1-1 in the Belgium game, then England would have drawn the game, won the group. They then would have played Japan, and I mean, who knows what would have happened in that game given what Japan did to Belgium. But then they would have played Brazil in the quarterfinals. But now, because England didn't win the group, and because of the fact that obviously Germany screwed up their own group, England have now got Sweden to play instead of anybody stronger. And frankly, there's lots of people, me included, who are very, very critical of Southgate's decision to rest players against Belgium, not just on the kind of like instrumental terms of England's chances of winning the World Cup, but also on a kind of moral terms about why, what it means to be in a World Cup and what you ought to contribute to a World Cup when you are there. Now, I think Southgate seems to have won the argument just because of the position that England now find themselves in. That all said, I don't think it's going to be very easy tomorrow. I mean, I think England will win, but I've seen a fair bit of Sweden so far, and I've been impressed with them. I think that they'll be very, very different from the Colombia game. They're not as aggressive. They defend very well. They keep their shape. But they've got a great way, Sweden, of making other teams look stupid. I mean, we ran a great piece on independent.co.uk by Lawrence Osterley about this the other day, talking about how, like, Sweden's kind of knack of making other teams screw up when they play them. I watched the Mexico game in the group stage where Sweden won 3-0, which was a result completely overshadowed, of course, by Germany losing 2-0 to South Korea and getting knocked out. But in that game, Sweden... they defended very well, they let Mexico come onto them, they picked them off on the break. They made Mexico look stupid, basically, because of their kind of canny counter-attacking game. I remember watching the Germany game, which again has only been remembered for that incredible Toni Kroos added time winner, which of course is now a completely irrelevant moment. Like, when it happened, I thought, oh well, that's going to be the moment that makes Germany go on and win it. But of course, it couldn't fix Germany's bigger problems. But the first half of that game, Germany were terrible. Like, they defended far too high up the pitch with Boateng and Hummels, and Sweden were getting in every time. And it was only really a bit of bad luck and a bit of bad finishing, which meant that Sweden didn't win that game 3-0 or 4-0. And then, of course, Sweden beat Switzerland again on the counter-attack in their last 16 match. So I do think it will be a very different challenge for England. And I was at the England press day in Repino on Thursday, and this kind of came up a lot, like how... And what England players said is, look, we know they're going to defend very well. That means two things. It means that we need to move the ball quickly to get around the back if we're going to score goals. And I think England can do that, but I think the only time they've done that really well this tournament was actually the first half an hour against Tunisia before Dele Alli got that groin injury, which has kind of constrained him ever since. And so I think that England will have to improve their... how they move the ball in open play to create the chances that they're going to need to score against Sweden. If they don't do that, then I think realistically they're going to have to rely on another pen or a corner or a free kick like they've done so far. So that's part one. But issue number two that England have to deal with in this game is defending against the counter-attack. Because even though Sweden don't have much pace, this is another point Lawrence made in his good piece, they are very good on the break. Like, they're very clever and they're good at kind of... They remind me a tiny little bit of the Leicester City team that won the Premier League. Like, they don't have as much pace or explosiveness, but they've got that kind of canniness where they suck you onto them. They kind of lure you into their traps, and then they go in and hit you. And I think that is a bit of an issue for England. That said, one thing that I think England have done very well this World Cup is defending against the counter-attack. I mean, that's really the benefit of playing the back three, isn't it? Is that you can push both wing. It's not like a 4-4-2 where you're anxious about pushing both full-backs forward because you're only left with two at the back. If you're playing a back three, you can push both wing-backs forward. And you've still got three at the back. And if one of them's Kyle Walker, that gives you more width to kind of cover across on that side if they are counter-attacking. I mean, even the Colombia game, I mean, I meant to watch that back, and I still haven't watched that back yet, so this might not be the case under, like, detailed analysis, but my impression at the time, particularly in the first hour when I was watching the game rather than writing, is there were quite a lot of times where Colombia were trying to counter after England had been attacking, but it was always snuffed out. Like, Walker, Stones and Maguire were always good at getting in there to block off Falcao, Cuadrado, Quintero, Arias and the other Colombian players who were breaking forward when they won the ball back. So I would take quite a lot of confidence from that English performance in terms of defending against the counter. Of course things can go wrong and it might be that Walker or Stones or Maguire make a mistake, although they have been, they have been very impressive in the last few, certainly against Colombia. Actually, the one thing I have seen more of, so on a slight tangent, going back on the Colombia game is Stones, like just how well Stones did at kind of doing what Pep wants his players to do, which is organising the team around them when they have possession. But anyway, I do think that England can be confident about their ability to defend the counter-attack, which is a very long way of saying I'm not that worried about England conceding, but I think they will have to play better to score in open play. So that's why I think it's going to be narrow, and I wouldn't be that surprised if it goes to extra time. There's actually a journalist sweepstake of results in England games. I went for 1-0 to England with a late Sterling winner. I don't know if it will actually be Sterling, and it might need extra time. But overall, impression is that it's going to be like difficult, and it's going to take a while. But I do think that England are going to get there in the end. Who knows? I mean, it could even be another Iceland if things start to go wrong. But I don't think it will be. So I'm feeling pretty confident. But I will speak to you again some point late tomorrow evening when I'll be joined by colleague Jonathan Liu, who's currently in Kazan at Brazil Belgium and is driving down to Samara tomorrow morning for the England game. And then we will both fill you all in with our thoughts on the match.
Thank you, Jack, for filling us all in, and especially for filling us in on Johnny's travel plans. We will hear from them, as he correctly identified, tomorrow night when we know if England are, would you believe it, World Cup semi-finalists or not. It will be the first time since 1990. And there are far weaker teams than were left in 1990. But while you can't take anyone for granted, there's no denying that tonight the World Cup lost its final two South American teams, and two South American teams of great repute. This Uruguay side were better than France for most of that game, and Brazil were the tournament favourites until they went out tonight. So with those two out, England get a slightly easier run to a potential trophy. And while no one's getting carried away, there is just starting to open up a path. And I think talking to Gareth Southgate today, he certainly seems to realise that things are breaking nicely for them, but they might as well make the most of it, while that is the case. And while that is the case, we will edit the podcast up for you and get this live. And by the time you hear the next podcast, we'll know where England are. You can obviously head to the website and check anything out in the meantime, independent.co.uk/football. Or as usual on the Instagram feed, Independent Sport on Twitter. We've got @IndieFootball, @IndieSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.